CliffCentral.com.
Hey, Penny Lebiani.
Hello, Gareth Cliff.
How are you, gorgeous?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good. You don't seem to age. What do you got going on there?
Huh? I don't know.
Are you drinking the blood of infants? What's your story?
Everybody says that. I could be doing that. I don't know. I think I'm recouping. Yes, the lost years. That's that. I don't know.
Look, you've been in the South African entertainment scene for a long ass time. No, you have. And I think a lot of people would be very surprised if you suddenly weren't there. But you also are not the kind of person who's done just one thing. So they can't put you in a box. They can't go, Penny is. You know, like when you were on Metro only, then they would say she was a radio DJ.
Yeah. You know?
Then when you were on TV, then you were just the TV person. But you're not just these things. You're all kinds of other things. You started your foundation. There's lots to talk about with you.
For me, actually, from the get-go, it was never about, fitting into a box. It's a good thing, but it's also been very, you know, a challenging thing in an industry where people want you to be one thing. Mm. I mean, I think I was probably one of those first people who fought off being called an it girl. Because that's what people wanted me to be. And I struggled with that because firstly, I didn't know what it was. And it's not like a concept that I woke up and say, I mean, it's different for like now. People say, I'm an it girl. I just wrote a column in a newspaper and I was, you're labeled a socialite. Like those are not things that I was like, I'm going to be a socialite. So I was just doing my work.
I don't think anyone wants to be called a socialite.
You'll be very surprised.
You think there are people that they're happy with that?
Yes.
That's all they want?
Well, not all what they want, but it's for some people it's like, I guess it's used as sort of like an entry point into the industry, whereas for me, I started on community radio. I started as a broadcaster.
That's right.
And the other things were just an add-on. And for me, when I was on community radio, when I covered theater, when I went to music events, I was getting content. I wasn't going there to be seen. So it was always work.
Yeah, but that is an old school skill that people don't learn anymore.
Yes,
You go out there and when you used to do this, when you started your career, there was no such thing as being famous.
No.
It was about doing a job.
Yes, I was
your
doing,
job was to tell people what was going on.
Yeah. So I think that for me, that was that. So I sort of like battled with being in that space, doing that, and then being visible, and in both sides, because then in the media spaces that I worked in, there were no young people like myself who were like that. A lot of the general people were there. If they went to events, they just went. So I went and covered the event and spoke about it on air. And then it's like, oh, what is this? And then at those events, they wanted to cover the fact that I'm there in other platforms, other mediums. So
I find this fascinating because your experience is almost unique. You were there when the product was the program.
Yes.
And then you almost became the product for a while.
Yes.
And then you became this hybrid of what the program was, what the content was, and what you had become and who you were.
Yeah.
And what you represented. And you were the only one riding that horse at that stage.
I would say so. And then I would say it's always a space that I've always found myself in. It's always been a hybrid. I've always been one of those people who is doing things that are in transition or sort of like playing with mediums when concepts are not fully sort of like embraced. I always find myself in spaces where there's a new platform and then I'm like, I'm in.
But isn't that exciting? Because then you can help determine what it'll look like.
It's a bit of both. It is
you
exciting.
You sound like you're exhausted by it.
It does, because sometimes it's like you have to go through the mundane of explaining what this thing is about and nobody's buying into it. And in an industry that's constantly, sort of like, changing. And also because, when you have been in this industry for as long as I have, it comes with certain expectations from certain quarters. And then people never know how to deal with you because then you make certain demands and then it sounds like you're asking things that, they've never heard because they don't foresee, 10 steps from where you are. So sometimes it can be very frustrating. So, yeah.
You say that it's frustrating, but it's also, like, it's something that very few people these days will understand because everyone is now on social media. Everyone is a broadcaster. Yes. Everyone is a content producer. Yes. Yeah, some are better than others.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So they describe you as multi-talented media personality with a cross-cultural experience on community, public service, and commercial radio and television.
That's a lot.
Are you happy with that, though? Is that a good description?
Because
when
something
anyone
like
reads my biography, I get really like, oh, no, I shouldn't have said that.
In a nutshell, it really speaks to it. I think what I was trying to communicate there was that, you know, there's people who have a rural experience and they come and live in the city, they come from college and then they find themselves in a cosmopolitan area.
Yeah.
And then there are those who are just, you know, city slickers, and that's just that. Like,
One are you?
You know, I've experienced all of those. I speak, you know, I'm part of a generation of young people who came out of rural areas, lived in the township, come out of the township. You live in one of the most cosmopolitan places like Yeovil, where we had the first interaction with Africans from the rest of the continent coming in, and people who were in exile. And we didn't have that experience. I didn't go to a multiracial school, but I interacted with a lot of white people from different backgrounds pre-democracy and then into democracy. So I have a unique experience that some things I struggle with. Like when people are like, oh, you know, xenophobia, what? I'm like, oh, you know, when I lived in Yeovil at 18, 19, nobody needed to teach me that other Africans are worth interacting with.
Right.
When it comes to issues around racism, I lived with Canadians, German, and Americans, but I didn't go to a multiracial school in South Africa. So when I interacted with South Africans who had a superiority complex, white people, I didn't understand where that came from, because I was like,
did you almost feel sorry for them? Like, I feel sorry for people who are xenophobic. Like, I think it's because they're ignorant.
Yes.
You know?
But the thing is, remember, socialized that way in high school and whatever. So for me, it was a foreign concept that people struggle with that.
Yeah. It's a stupid thing to be struggling with.
Because I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I come from Bushbuck Ridge. By seven, I spoke eight languages. So being multilingual for me, it's like, we need like a whole professor to tell us that we need to do the, so a lot of things I battle with them you know, like things like people say, you need to grow a natural hair. Like, it's like, that was normal for me being African. You know what I mean? So a lot of things I battle with them because for me, my mom didn't sit and tell me that. Nobody.
In other words, what you regard as common sense seems to be really hard for other people to grasp.
To grasp.
So do you find yourself having to explain constantly why people need to wake up? Because it sounds like it's frustrating.
It has been frustrating because, I mean, and it's part of those things that I even struggle with even in my broadcast career, because things which were simple, I'll be like, okay, I think I don't want to be in studio for a week. I want to go do an OB and do a, people were like, what are you talking about? So I've always been that kind of person. So it frustrated me because things which were common, I found that a lot of people.
Okay, but here's an example of where it wasn't like that for you, because you came face to face with a lot of sexism.
Yes.
in the beginning of your career, especially like on radio, because radio has always been this very masculine thing, and women can't do mornings and all that crap, which of course we know is nonsense now.
Yeah.
But you had to fight that fight almost on your own right in the beginning.
Yes, and I think the thing is, again, I had no concept of what sexism is. I just thought, I am as good as the boys.
Yeah.
I hang out with them. I do the same things. I mean, I'm better at this and that. I can add. But I didn't look at it as sexist. So I didn't have the isms. I had no labels.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Only after the fact, I'm like, oh, that was sexism. Oh, that was racism. Oh, that was chauvinism. So I found myself, when I look back at like, what happened to me? What did I go through?
No, I wish more people had gone through whatever you went. Okay, so let's just go to the beginning, because I think people are fascinated by the fact that you have all these different aspects to your personality, and you might have picked different parts of them up from different parts of your life. Like, Bushbuck Ridge is a tough place to start your life.
Definitely.
That's a tough-ass place to start.
Have you been to Bushbuck Ridge?
Well, I've driven through it. There's no messing around there. Like, people are, they're looking for jobs. They're hungry for success or for any kind of opportunity. It's not the kind of place where there's a lot of resources.
No.
It's not the kind of place where the government has put any work or effort into.
Well, in recent times, I guess they try to do that.
I don't know. I don't see enough. Yeah. I mean, I don't see electricity and water and roads being rolled out. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, there's been a bit of change. You know, I always say to people that my level of looking at like how things have changed in the country over the last 20 years, I always use Bushbuck Ridge as a yardstick.
Tell me.
You know, there were no traffic lights. There is traffic lights now. There's a traffic circle. There's a shopping center. You know, there's a College of Education. They're not grand big things. Yes, water is still a big issue.
Then there is more than I thought there was.
So there's developments, and I think a part of the people from that part of the world is their own resilience and self actualization and self reliance. You know, the people who would leave those villages, come to the city and work and save and build homes, like they've developed for themselves. They will get that house plan and go home every month and build a house. So there's development that people themselves have made an effort of, and there's a bit of like what the government has done. It's not like my grandmother still doesn't have access to water.
But what you're talking about is progress.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about is something that, and this drives me crazy when I hear people saying, oh, nothing's changed.
Yes.
Because that's not true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I need to be educated on Bushbuck Ridge. Next time you go back there, take me with you.
Okay.
So who still lives there? Your grandmother?
My grandmother, my 89-year-old grandmother is still there. My dad recently relocated there as well. I've got uncles and aunts. One of my aunts was a school teacher, school principal there. My cousins,
how often do you go back?
Every second, third month.
Okay.
I try, especially now because my grandmother is of old age, to try and just spend time. My grandfather had a 13-hectare farm there.
Yeah.
So my uncle runs that. So I'm constantly going there to see family.
That's where the roots are.
Yeah, that's where the roots are. And then I came to live in Soweto in my teens. I literally came to Soweto to go to high school at 13.
You're on your own.
My mom and dad eventually qualified for a house in Soweto. So that's how I came to live with them. I mean, in between that time, I traveled back and forth to Pimville, I mean to Deep Kloof, where they had family, where
right.
family, or Katlehong, where they lived in their one room shack there. Yeah.
Okay, so like Soweto is the center of South Africa's political universe.
Yes.
And growing up there at the time that you were growing up, that must have been phenomenal because there was so much going on.
It was.
You must have met fascinating people.
I mean, it was 89, 88, 89 when I went to high school. So sort of like just before the dawn of democracy, just before the political parties were unbanned. So you go into high school, you would see a lot of like people that you read about, that you see in newspapers, but in television. So, and Pimville was that kind of place.
Yeah.
You know, your Super Hot Sticks Mabuse, Brenda Fassi, Sticks Murewa.
Yes.
You know, your Dr. Kumalazu would hang out there because he used to be a student at Soweto College of Education. So you saw a lot of sort of like socially,
recognized
people, you know, doctors, things like that, you know, people like that, lawyers, etc. Actually, the house where my parents, we ended up living in Zone 5, belonged to Mr. Mazibugo, who was a teacher at Morris Isaacson. So so it's that kind of place in Selection Park. So you're a child, you're not really aware of what's going on, but there's a buzz and an energy. But at the same time, the other side of it was just the township life of you have school going kids and you have the local hijackers and jerk rollers and you have political sort of astute students who are want to stop trucks and take
activists,
off and activists
yeah.
and you know, in between. So it was just a melting pot of culture and energy and vibrancy and of what is possible as well.
This must have given you a place for because your personality was obviously something that you had from birth, but it gave you a place to flower almost.
Yeah, I always say that Soweto sort of like you know, gave me the chutzpah. Is that what they call it?
That's
like
a
the
good word.
Yeah, the chutzpah, the attitude. I think the spark has always been there,
yeah.
But Soweto is where you're like, oh, I think it's possible, because if you see someone driving Brenda Fassi driving down the streets with a drop top and they're famous, and you're like, if they're driving down here and then you hear that
it can happen to me,
that Winnie Mandela is, you know, on the other side of that, you know, and if there's like sort of like a stairway and it's in the news, you're
yes.
like, okay,
this place
is
happening.
It's not far-fetched. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you see some local television actors and things like that. So it really made things look visible and real.
So was there at that stage any dream of getting into the career that you would eventually be in? Or was it just, let me, whatever opportunities come, I'll take them?
I think it was there, but I don't think I was conscious to it, so to say. I mean, when I was in standard nine, I started entering like high school beauty pageants. But what I also recall was I read a book by Dr. David Malapo, who was based in the US, and he had this book, this diary thing called I Can, and it's an I Can Foundation type of thing. And then he would talk about, like, you know, anything is possible, mm-hmm. you know, what you put your mind into. You
this
know,
was
you can
before
become,
The Secret. This guy was ahead of his time.
This is between, like, I think I was like 12, 13. You know, my first 2 years of high school, I had that little diary. And I've always loved reading. I consumed a lot of media. I watched a lot of television. I read a lot of, you know, City Press, Sowetan, that kind of thing. And I started, you know, with television, I saw people like Felicia, you know.
Yeah. I think Felicia inspired so many more people than we know.
And then I would see people like, you know, Vasisana entering beauty pageants and other girls from Soweto as well. So I could connect the dot. I listened to a lot of Radio Bob, Chich Mataz, you know, Ben Dikobe, Glenn Lewis, you know, all of those guys. And Glenn was from Pimville, you know. So I could connect that. Okay, I think there's this media thing. And then when I was reading up on careers, I knew that it had a connection with journalism, but I knew that for me, a journalist at the time, actually the guy who lived behind my house, used to work for Drum Magazine, was about crime reporting and political reporting, which was about jumping into dustbins and writing all the gory stories and people who had died and political violence. And I was like, no. I don't want that part. I'm not interested in that part. But I'm interested in meeting people, having, you know, conversations, knowing who they are, what inspires them, and, you know, changing lives. So I couldn't put the words like, what is this thing that I want to do? Until I saw Felicia on television, and I had read about Oprah and other people, and I could say, that's the thing that I want to do, but I didn't know what to call it. So I think the media thing was there, you know, around about that time.
Well, whatever platform you were given or that you fought for, you kind of made yours. Because radio, you developed a reputation very quickly in radio. You developed a good one. This is a woman who's fun to listen to. She knows what she's talking about. She's passionate
about Gareth.
What she's doing. I remember this. When I started off in radio, you were already a name.
Yes.
And in television, you've done the same thing. Like, Penny Lebiani is going to make this interesting to watch.
Oh, thank you.
You don't think so? You seem almost surprised by that. Has no one ever told you that?
I never get a lot of those. I mean,
are people in your life such shits they won't compliment you?
Yeah, no, I never get a lot of those. Actually, I don't. It's one of those things where I find that I don't know. Some people feel that I was surrounded at times where a lot of people felt that if they told me a lot of things, I'll get a big hit. That's what I've dealt a lot with that, actually. One of the things that I try to speak to a lot of young people who are coming up and affirm them, because I never got a lot of that. I got a lot of criticism from actually a lot of people. No, don't do that. No, you're too loud. No, you're this. No, you're that. And it actually made me doubt myself.
Was that a because you're a woman thing? Was that a because you're black thing? Was that a because you're Penny thing?
I think it was probably a mix. It could have been like a woman thing, and I just didn't know how to interpret it because how do I, you know, when you're a natural at things, you don't think about things. You know, I don't sit and go, I'm going to do this because people are going to react like this.
You're not you're not trying to artificially create something that's already there.
But then a lot of people didn't know how to react to that. And then they would misconstrue it. So
would they say things to you like, you have too many opinions?
Yes. I was told you have too many opinions. I'm not ladylike. That's one of the most memorable ones because I had to understand. And those were senior people who were supposed to be guiding me. And
who you respected.
And who I respected.
They could have broken, they could have broken you.
They did. Well, they did at some point because I doubted myself because I started questioning. Then I started comparing myself with other women who they would choose over me. And they did use that, you know, they did use that. And a lot of people say, no, I mustn't talk about it. I must just forget about it. It won't happen. And I'm like, but the reality of it is it was a negative thing. And then half of them, I don't think they realize what they would do, what they were doing. So it wasn't a case of like, let's nurture this. It was a case of like, no, you should be ladylike. You shouldn't do the, why are you always asking things? Just keep quiet. Like, and I'll be like, But I thought
I hate that. I hate when people tell you how should you should be you.
Yes.
A weaker person than you might give up after all that kind of feedback. I mean, thank God you didn't. But a lot of, imagine how many young girls might have given up on a career because of those sorts of comments from their fathers, uncles, respected
managers,
people in the community.
Whatever. Yeah. One of the things, actually, one of my pet peeves about the industry is when a young person is fresh in the industry and then I hear them talking, you know, who's established, who said what to them. I'm like, don't you dare listen to any of that nonsense that they've ever said. And it's little snipes, you know, in a makeup room, so it's little things like that. So you might think that it's just a harmless conversation, because words are very powerful. So people say that. They can say it in a meeting. You raise a point and you ask a question and they're like, I mean, really, do we have to be entertaining like these loud mouths? You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that I recall that were said to me. At some point, I was called a liability based on an article, and when you find out you were discussed by management at that level, and nobody could come to you and say, this is, you know, they will not approach you and have a conversation with you. So it was bad people management.
But Penny, don't you think it's also because you seem to have a very innate sense of freedom? Like you have.
Yes.
You have this ability that I think a lot of people wish they had, and maybe that's why you threaten them.
Yes.
You know you. You know what you want. You say what you think. To me, that's integrity. It's also a display of freedom. Like, you don't have to answer to anyone.
Yeah.
You can be a good worker where you need to be a good worker. You can deliver to the audience that you care about. You can have your own say, and none of those things are mutually exclusive. Like, you can find a sweet spot where – you're allowed to be Penny.
Yes.
And if you're not allowed to be Penny, what's the point of being?
I think, you know, that's probably one of the best ways I've had it being phrased. It's just that I always say it's like, it's not like somebody went and said, okay, this is how you become free. For me, it's like it came naturally. So I didn't understand when I always think
of that line from Bob Marley about
mental slavery. So for me, it was like that. It's like I didn't need to go read about it. Nobody had to teach me. I came naturally with it. But now here's the thing. I never saw the next person as a threat. Therefore, I didn't understand if anybody saw me as a threat.
But for them, it's not about Penny's too loud or she's not ladylike. What they should have been saying, if they were honest, was Penny threatens my own feelings about me, and what she's saying is dangerous to my position or to what I believe. Instead of accepting that and finding a way to understand you, these people would try to break you down.
Yes, but in my naive way, I never thought, oh, Gareth would be so deliberate to go out of their way to break me down. I just thought, oh my God, there must be something wrong that I did.
Hmm.
So I would spend a lot of time questioning myself and my behavior, and saying, oh, I gotta stop that. But now what that did is that then it chipped a lot of who I am a lot. So I had to rework. So when you, like, for example, when people say to me, oh my goodness, you look so young, you look this. For me, it's almost like I had to go back and reclaim myself, because I felt, oh my God, I'm a lot. I'm too much. I can't do this. This is, you know, and there was no one guiding me. I didn't have like a brand specialist saying to me, this is the way that you're going to go. You know, people talk about, having mentors to hold you. Yes, there were women who were in radio and whatever, but they didn't go through a similar journey that I went. So even if I was friends with them, they couldn't relate. They could be like, yo, Penny's a lot. Yes, you have a lot to say. Hey, and you and these guys, and you and this fashion, and you and this. And then I wasn't sitting there going, now this is what we're going to do. You know, this generation goes, Sabangena, this is what we're going to do. I didn't have a plan. I was just being me. And I didn't have a squad because, you know, I didn't. You know, when I say that, people are like, no, you're lying. And
yeah, but you know how many people are envious of that? Because they spend their whole lives trying to get to a point that you started from.
Yes. So, but the thing for me is that then where do I go next? So sometimes I sit and go, okay, Penny.
You drive yourself crazy.
I do. I do, Gareth. I sit and I go, oh,
all right. So
gosh.
Let me ask you then, because this is the obvious difficult part of the next evolution is, who do you trust? I mean, who do you know you can actually take advice from, because they're not hiding an agenda?
I had to learn to trust myself. That's one. I had to work on that. I had to work on trusting myself totally and actually allowing myself to say, look, I can make a mistake and it's my mistake and I'm going to make it and it's fine.
Did you ever try to people please? Did you ever try to be fake?
Yes, I try to people please. Okay, the fake part a little bit because I would not be able to do that. But the people pleasing, yes. So I would be that person that, oh my God, I'm like, yes, finally, I'm going to get a moment with Gareth and we're going to connect and whatever. And I chat to you. And then I'm like, I'm going to do my best. And then Gareth and I click. And then tomorrow I see you and you're the cold person that you are. And I would go home and cry because I'm like, after everything I did with Gareth and we were so cool, I can't believe he just, it's like the moment never happened. So I spent a lot of time working on a lot of that. I spent a lot of time like explaining and apologizing. Like, I'm so sorry. This is not me. I don't know. Because people would just misconstrue anything I say. So
they say there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
And if you're born with a personality and a feeling of who you are and being free, there's a price.
There is a price.
You're going to constantly have to be on your guard to not upset people.
Yeah.
You're always thinking, did I do this right? Did I do this wrong? It sounds really difficult.
Yeah. But I mean, I think
I feel that way sometimes.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. But I think it's a case of, sometimes I go, it's good that I wasn't not aware of who I was at the time, because then I could be able to go through that journey to be able to even sit here. Because if I was aware, I'm wondering how my ego would have been, what I would have done to myself, what sort of self-destructive things I could have done to try and make myself cope. Because I didn't realize that I wasn't coping. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I have to be, I can be a lot. I walk into a room, I'm loud. I wouldn't even try. You know, people say you walk into a room and you just take over the room. No, I don't take over the room. I just came in. I'm like, hey, what's up? How's it?
It's so, just your default setting.
It's my default setting. So I'd walk in and go, hi. And then they go, what's wrong? Oh, okay. Let me try again. So, you know what I mean? And not just professionally, even personally. I mean, some of the things that guy would say that I dated, it was just shocking. Like, gosh, Penny, do you have tact? I'm like, I just asked a straight up question.
But did you ever get accused of being, an attention seeker?
Yes, but I never owned. I never accepted because I just never got it. I never really went out of my way to get attention. I mean, it's not me. It's not what I do. Because, dramatic. I've been accused of being dramatic.
But again, this is people who don't understand your personality,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
So out of all of those hard lessons, how did you get to a point where you embraced you? I mean, is this just a question of experience and time? Is it an aha moment you had?
I had a few, aha moments. I think, one time I walked away from radio. I think I'm probably one of those few people who went on air and said, yo guys, by the way, this is that was my last show.
You quit Tobela?
Yeah, when I quit Metro.
Oh, Metro.
2006, my first quitting of Metro. I left and I was like, you know what? Let me just go deal with myself. And I had my son. After I had my son.
But then you were one of the few people who admitted what it felt like after your son was born.
Yes.
To have that postnatal depression.
Yes.
Which nobody was talking about.
Yes, I spoke about it.
Especially not in black communities.
Not in black communities. Yeah. So part of me talking about that, actually part of me getting to that level of having postnatal depression, all of that came from that space. Came from that space of like, where I was questioning a lot of like, who I am, you know, who am I, what am I about, why am I here? And then I had my son, and then I had a sense of worth and something of like, you know, significance. And I was like, okay, you know what, maybe my life is not all about this radio thing and whatever. Let's focus our energies on something else. And that happened. And I was like, you know what, actually, I'm going to talk about this because I'm sure that there's a lot of people who are going through this and I'm going to use my name and my profile and my experience to actually help others. And that's become one of those conversations. And I've been having that, like, you know, since.
Well, I remember you saying that you thought that if someone objective saw you, they would say you needed to be admitted.
Yes.
And you spoke about mental illness
yes.
as well. And since then, you've spoken about it many times, not necessarily because you know, you know a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah.
But because mental illness is one of those things nobody ever talks about. It used to be so taboo and like, oh, shame, that poor person, yes. they're mad.
Yes.
And nobody talked to, now it's becoming better.
Yeah.
You know, bipolar disorders, depression. These are things that a lot of people go through.
But also these are things that, you know, being young in the entertainment industry is one of the most toxic industries. I'm sure you would know that.
Well, it makes you grow up really fast. It makes you grow up
really fast. But the reality of it is that,
because you're growing up in front of
you're
everyone.
You're growing up in front of everyone. No one prepares you for that.
No.
And as you were talking earlier on, nobody holds your hand and say you're gonna turn left, you're gonna turn right. This is how it's gonna go, because actually it's organically happening. Your experience is your experience, but others have gone a similar route, you know. And the traps are almost the same.
I'm just trying to think, like the Penny Lebiane of 18 years ago.
Yeah.
She couldn't go. You couldn't talk to your parents about this. They had no idea of the kind of world that you were inhabiting. You couldn't talk to your bosses because they had an agenda. They wanted to keep you lean and mean, and they didn't want to pay you more, and they didn't want to know about your problems.
No.
And they weren't there to guide you. They just wanted you to deliver.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
Friends wouldn't understand because none of them were necessarily in the same position you were. So it was lonely.
Yeah. So it can be very, very lonely. And at the same time, you know, 18 years ago, the industry is very exciting and it's going through a transition again. You know, the emergence of like tabloids. Mm. Then you become a topic of interest, you know, and then you're threatened with your behavior is going to cost you your job. So you're always like straddling these two worlds where you're caught up in freedom and fear. You know, it's like if I'm too free, it's bad for my job. Like that's how I was made to feel. Like if I'm too free, you know, it's bad for my job. So there's certain things that you need to keep to yourself. And a lot of the older, you know, women who are in the industry or who are even my peers, you know, it was like that whole ladylike thing came from that. You know, you always have an opinion. Know your place, Penny. You know, know your place. So even if you know, and who are you to talk? You're 25 and what? You're not even married. You don't even have a boyfriend. We talk to real women who have husbands. And so all that nonsense. And you're like, gosh, what level of marginalization is this? You know,
those people never were emancipated.
They were never emancipated from slavery.
So you couldn't even talk to boyfriends and because if you were in a relationship with someone and then you start talking about the stuff, they go, oh, listen to her. She's such a drama queen. She's such an attention seeker.
She thinks everything revolves around her. Yes, they think everything revolves around her. Penny, they think everything revolves around her. You know, she thinks
you lose everywhere.
This is not radio, Penny. It's not your radio show. This is a relationship. I'm the man here. Oh, okay. You know, so it's those kind of things. And I think it's such a beauty now to watch, like I'm watching Reedy and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, wow.
There's a self act.
I'm like, yes. You know what I mean? So
she just, but she did listen. I mean, you paved the way for a lot of women too. Let's not mess around here. You walked out of a job that most people would die for more than once.
Yes.
When she did that with her radio career here and she decided she's going to write this book and everything else and become a mom and she was going to do what's right for her at this stage in her life.
At this stage in her life, yeah.
I mean, it's great, but you did this before.
Well, I'm sure there's others who did that. I mean, you know, for me, I think it's you know, I believe that we some of the things that we do give permission, you know, to other people. Yeah. And sometimes it's not even us being aware of that. I think Oprah says that, you know, but you constantly do that. That's why it's sort of so important that you in touch with you and you doing things, for you, you know, and then there's things that you're going to do that, other people will come and fine tune them and do and even do them better.
Why do so many women feel guilty about that?
Because we're made to feel guilty. We're made to, you know, I always say that, you know, I'm a hybrid. I have the best of both worlds. I've always wanted it to be like that. I wanted to have a career and be a mom. And, you know, I never wanted to have one over the other because I saw, you know, women generations before me, they had to do that. You know, I look at my mom, you know, she was a housewife, my grandmother. And I'm like, and I listen to them and when I talk to them, I'm like, these women are so brilliant. They're so smart. They could have done so much for themselves, you know, circumstances and all sorts of things. Mm. And then for me, it was like, if I could do what I love. That's another thing. People say to me, oh, you know, people are like, you know, you must be passionate. You must do what you love. I'm like, that's what I did from day one. So people always say to me, Penny, you know, have you ever thought of doing this and this? And I'm like, but where's my passion in that? I don't know what I'm going to do. And then, you know, now people talk about, you mustn't be driven by money. You must be driven by, I'm like, okay, now that's what I did. But now I need, you know what I mean? So I'm always trying to like figure out, I'm like, why did my experience be like that? But there were others who did these things before, who might have not achieved, that I looked up to.
Yes, it's almost like you were born in the right place and time.
Okay, yeah, I guess so. I'll say that. I was part of a great generation of young people.
Even
who,
if you were you,
yeah,
but you were alive at your mother's time,
yeah,
if you were born when she was born,
yes,
there wouldn't have been any of those opportunities available, yes, to you. And if you were born now, you would either have to be one of those vacuous it girls.
Yeah.
Or you would have never had this career.
Oh, never, yeah.
Because there's so much competition now. So almost in some ways, it's magical that it happened at the time
it happened. At the time that it did, yeah.
And that's also something that I suppose you only get to when you've had experience.
Yes.
Right? You can look back on your life and go, wow, I'm grateful for this, grateful for that, grateful for that. And I'm not jealous of other people. Like, I don't think when I talk to you, I never get the impression that you are trying to find your place in a rank.
No.
I've never, ever heard you say, I'm comparing myself to this person or that person. No. That's healthy. Talk about mental health. That's mental health.
That was also very conscious because I watched a lot of like American entertainment, and I understood how the media would play, especially on women. You know, as careful as I've been of labels, you know, some would say, so Penny, you're a feminist. And I'll be like, I mean, I know about Gloria Steinem and her story and whatever, but I'm not, you know, labeling myself as that. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't, but I'm aware of the movements and the challenges and the achievement that the women movement has achieved. And I was conscious of those things. So I went into media with that understanding. And I was very conscious of like looking at like the women who came before me, what they had to achieve one, but what they struggled with, so that I don't go there and piss on their hard work and go, I'm the first to do this, because I knew how mm-hmm. disrespected they were, how mistreated they were. So part of like me speaking up and saying some of the things was me paying homage to them, but at the same time taking my position, because I didn't want to come in and disrespect the effort that they've done. Same equal to men. I mean, when I got into talk at when they gave me talk at Metro, I spoke to Tim Mudise. I went to him and I said, what makes a good talk show host? And he said, listening. You know, so those are some of the things. So when I got into radio, I spoke to Glenn Lewis, you know, how do I put together my demo? So I respected the people who were there before me, because I didn't want to come out and sound like I'm the best slice of bread when bread has been made before. Because people sound like that, you know, people sound like that. They sound like, oh, we're the first ones to do this. I'm like, no, you're not. But again, I never want to be the person who says, no, you're not. Because I'm like, okay. If that's what you want to believe, you know.
You have to learn to let go.
Yeah,
like if
yeah.
someone thinks a certain thing and that's what they're convinced of, there's nothing I can do about it. So that old adage of what other people think of you is none of your business.
Yeah. So the whole competition thing as well, I also got awoken to it when I realized that, oh, okay, there's certain people who are being, you know, cheated against me to compete and whatever. And I just thought, and I just used to think, okay, if I'm on radio and you're a television presenter, what are we competing on? You know, if you're you know, so I just thought, look, I'm on radio. Actually, I'm here to celebrate a lot of people. Mm-hmm. This is like a platform. I can talk about your work and how great you are. So I was one of those first people, for example, to talk about local celebrities on radio. And then I remember they would say, why are you talking about local celebrities? I'm like, cause Americans are not talking about us. I'm like, if I go to an event and they're local celebrities, why are we coming back here and talking about what American celebrities are doing? We have our own. Mm. Let's have local fashion, you know, people. You know, I was also one of those few people to have the first like, you know, gay stylist on air. And cause for me, and again, I didn't need a lesson on LGBTI classes. For me, I was like, these are cool people that I hang out with. Yo, guys, they're my friends. Let's chat. So I think for people, someone who was watching was like, oh, she's doing this deliberately. It's a trend. No, I was just, it's.
that's so powerful. I think we get so wrapped up in people because everyone assumes if they're a manipulative person.
Listen, we all are. Yes. Like,
when you've said outrageous and controversial things, you weren't setting out to be outrageous and controversial. No. You were saying what was on your mind, and sometimes it just rubbed some people up the wrong way.
The wrong way, yeah. Yes. And I think also the lesson out of this, like, it actually will rub up some people the wrong way, but it's not a reflection of me. It's about
them.
It's how they take it on. You know, and I had to learn that, because, I'm sure you know that, you know, but, I think for me as well, it was a case of like, you know, whether I was on 12 midnight or Sunday 2 p.m., it didn't matter because, my thoughts were my thoughts, how I felt, and I'd voice them out. If we're in a meeting in strategy, I'll raise my hand and I'll say, so a lot of people, especially male, black male, struggled with it. And then it was like,
Warasa,
Penny, he's just always talking. But it was just, it was interesting.
Can we talk about some of the stuff that you've done that I don't think a lot of people know? Your foundation, the stuff you've done with NGOs, with educational institutions, you know, women's development, health, self-actualization. I mean, these are, even with the Grace Bible Church, the stuff you've done with UNICEF.
Yes. I think, again, it was a case of like, you know, one wants to use the platforms that she has access to impact positively. So I'm constantly adding my voice to like a lot of things. So if I'm part of a church and they're doing projects, I get involved.
But again, people are going to say, yeah, oh, Penny's trying to be a charitable sort of person.
No,
it's not that.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the things you care about.
So I go to talk, for example, to give a talk at TUT, mm-hmm, to the journalism class, and it's a graduation class. They have 10 top performing students. All 10 performing, best performing students are boys. And then I go, oh, where are the girls?
Uh-oh.
And then everybody says, uh-oh. I'm like, to be in this class, it means you must have been the top performing student in your school. Now you're at college. Oh, I know what happened. Now you start focusing on your weave, and now you're going to the clubs, and you've met all the soccer players here in Pretoria, and you're going to the best clubs and see all the DJs. Oh, now you're no longer top performing. You're focusing on your lipstick and your hair and the jeans. Guess what? I know what your mother did to get you here. They probably sold a cow in the village, took a loan. Oh, and you're probably going to be the first person to graduate in your family, but now you don't care about it. Guess what? The boys are going to pass and they're going to make so much money. And you, what's going to happen to you? You're just that girl, you know, who's here at uni to be cute. Cuteness is not going to help. And you want to, oh, I know why. Oh, you want to be a television presenter and be on radio. Guess what? You have to drive the desk for yourself. You have to do your content. The boys are not going to be nice to you because you've got cute hair when you're there. Next year, I'm back here. I want the best performing girls. I'm actually going to put my $5,000, you know, out of this gig, and all of you are going to perform better. You know, so it's little things like that I start to do. So small little initiatives. And those girls are like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, when you're an A, they don't care how cute you are.
But that kind of thing, when someone says the truth to you like that, it's very unwelcome.
No, it's not popular.
And even what you're saying now, if someone took that out of context, they'd say, oh, Penny's such a sexist. You know, especially if you were a man and you said that.
Yeah.
Then they'd go, oh my God, she just doesn't care. But then you put your own money down and you say, girls, this is for you, but you gotta earn it.
You gotta earn it.
You know, this is an interesting thing that I think a lot of young girls and guys in South Africa, when they look at the entertainment business, and you're someone who can speak about this with authority, they see it as a way to get famous.
Mm.
Not as a craft they want to be the best at.
But also they don't see it as a way of contributing to this country of ours that has got a terrible history, that's a great story to tell and to sell to the world. And you know this because you've traveled. That you know, if our country can produce the amazing people, leadership that it has, what will our generation be remembered for? This media is one of the most powerful platforms that we have, but how can we positively use it, not just to change our own lives, but to change other people's lives? And for me, my thing was like, if I just lived in Bushbuckridge and ended up there, I can tell you my story, how I would have ended up. I would have married some local guy there. I would have 6 kids, you know, in the village, and I would have been a local teacher. And that's just that. And there's nothing wrong with if anybody became that,
sure, you know.
And I always say that my mother couldn't have said to me, go to the best school and do this or whatever. But you know what she did? She said to my dad, I'm not going to raise my kids in the village. I'm going to live in the township. For her standing up and saying that, that just gave me a layer to my life, you know. And it's little things like that. That exposure that she, you know, she also got it from her dad in a little way that we all have a way that we can contribute. That yes, the fame is going to come, but what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? And actually, in 2017, it's so easy to be famous.
Mm.
You know, I always
you just
say,
set yourself on fire on social media, and people will
China,
watch.
Like I go. Sometimes I go, oh, you know, my followership on Instagram is not growing. And if I just put on nice panties and a bra, mm-hmm. Everybody will be talking about me. But no one is interested in what I'm talking about on radio and all the, that's not cool enough.
But also that person who does the panties and bra, they're going to be there for 15 minutes and they'll get their attention.
Well,
and then
look,
within a week after, no one's going to care.
If they stretch it for 3 hours, for 3 years, whatever, that's fine. But for me, that was not part of my, you know, MO. That's not part of, my generation of guys say, oh my God, you know, you were my crush. You know, I thought you were the sexiest woman. I'm thinking, at some point, I didn't even know what the difference is between flirting and running. because that's not what was in my head. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're like, oh, you're the sexiest thing. When I'm listening on radio, I'm thinking, do you think I'm even trying to be sexy? And I'm just like, but there's certain people who that works for. It just is not my cup of tea.
Didn't you have some horrible armed robbery at your house in April this year?
Yeah, well, I had a break-in.
What happened?
I actually still can't explain it, Gareth. Somebody came into my house, literally, and took my laptop and my handbag.
But you were you there?
I was in the house. I was sleeping.
You just wake up and they were gone.
Yeah, I just woke up in the morning.
But that you were okay.
Yes, I was okay, and the kids were okay. That's just that. So, but yeah.
Hey, we live in a country where there are a lot of people
of
who are
people,
very
yeah,
hungry.
Who are very, yeah, and who, yeah. So it's
so sorry
it's one
about
of those.
Your laptop and your phone.
Thank you.
At least you weren't hurt, because that's always what people
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that's
know?
What. Yeah,
you know, South Africans. Whenever yeah. anything terrible happens, you go at least. There's always an at least.
At least, yeah. That's how it is. But yeah, it's still a beautiful country.
Oh, it is, and this is the place where you have made your mark and will continue to make your mark.
Most definitely. And then, you know, I think we also live in a beautiful continent. I think there's so much that we can do across the continent. As much as we can do things globally, I think we've
Start
been
here. There's opportunity.
Yeah, there's opportunity here, sure. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done here. I hear a lot of people who have opportunities to pursue things overseas and whatever. You know, there's some who need to do a lot of work, you know, here at home. If that opportunity comes, it does come. But I think, you know, South Africa also needs to take its rightful place on the continent. We need to embrace the continent.
I think we need to earn that.
I think we need to earn our place in the continent.
We have not earned it. We had such an attitude about ourselves. People from all over the rest of Africa are looking to us, and they're not suspicious and they're not angry, but we're making them angry and suspicious because we treat people from the rest of Africa badly here, and we carry on like we are superior, and we're not.
We're not. We're not. We have a lot to learn. You know, we have a lot to add value to, and we have a lot to also reclaim. And we also have a unique story that we need to fit into the puzzle, you know, of the continent. And I think, you know, that's a space that I'm always looking into, that I, you know, that I'd like to play in. Even when I did the Nelson Mandela Foundation Kilimanjaro climb,
yes,
in 2015, that's what's always been in my mind. It's like, you know, how do we do that? How do we do that? How do we create, you know, our own New York, our own London, our own Paris here, you know, on the continent. And then, you know, when we say these are the top Londoners, these are the top New Yorkers, these are, you know, who are the top Joburgers, Capetonians, you know, Hararians, you know, Lago, you know what I mean? Like we need to be, who's a Gareth of Kenya? Do you know them?
We've got to find these people.
Do you have conversations
with
them? We've got to find them.
They exist.
Yeah, of course. Who are the, you know what I mean? Like the pennies of the rest of the country, those women in media. So I had to like learn about those and find ways, you know, and get to like interact, find ways of like, okay, how do we do that slowly? I get to that. It's getting there slowly.
Well, I don't think you've ever been a loudmouth, and I don't think you've ever been unladylike. I love it. I love it about you. You cause trouble wherever you go.
Gareth.
Without even trying.
See, I don't trust people like you because you're always like that from day one. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, so do you. So same to you.
It's like, you know, so people, I'm like, oh, okay, Gareth, you've always been that guy who's like, yo, Pens, what's up?
Penny Lebiani, keep doing your magic.
Thank you, Gareth.
Cool. We love you.
We love you too.
Let's change this place for the better. Let's see what we can do to help other people.
Let's do that.
All right. Penny Lebiani, everybody. CliffCentral.com.